Hello, Gallatin Valley. This is Dr. Arliss Woods, psychologist, with Dr. Suzanne Woods, speech-language pathologist, hosting the Health and Happiness program. This is 95.9 FM and KGVM.org in Bozeman, Montana. We receive the support of the Montana Psychological Association Public Education Committee. Also, KGVM is grateful for the support of Bozeman Magazine and the Greater Yellowstone Events Calendar, connecting their readers to the people, places, and things to love about Bozeman. You can add your events at bozeman.com, found at newsstands in the Greater Yellowstone area, and online at bozemanmagazine.com since 2007. Now, Dr. Suzanne introduces a most important topic and makes introductions.
We have been hearing huge statements about immigrants lately, so we began to research factual information. It is of great interest, and we have some notable experts on this topic today to share information as well. We have Dr. Mercado from the American Psychological Association, Wilmot Collins, immigrant and mayor of Helena, and Eamon Fahey, the state director of the IRC for Montana. And to today's topic, immigrant business owners have created millions of American jobs through major corporations and countless small businesses. In the most recent analysis, nearly 45% of firms on the Fortune 500 list were founded by immigrants or their children. That's an astounding statistic. Remember, only 14% of the population is foreign-born. Some of the companies they've started include Anheuser-Busch, Capital One, Carnival Cruise, Colgate, eBay, Goldman Sachs, Google, Kraft, Levi Strauss, LinkedIn, Nordstrom, Oscar Mayer, Procter & Gamble, Tesla, and YouTube, just to name a few. The list is significantly longer, and it's an eye-opening statistic. But immigrants are major job creators on our main streets, too. Foreign-born entrepreneurs drive business creation through thousands of small mom-and-pop stores that line our communities. Not only do these companies generate jobs, but companies on the Fortune 500 list that were founded either by immigrants or the children of immigrants generate more than $6 trillion in revenue and 42% more jobs than the businesses that are already established by U.S.-born individuals. That's a bigger economic revenue figure than the whole economy of some of the most industrialized countries in the world, like Germany and Japan. The value and economic importance of these companies to the U.S. economy is massive. You have to ask yourself, where would the American economy be without immigrant contributions? Which brings us to our guests today to bring this topic down to each of us. Dr. Mercado, could we start with you and talk about how you are entangled in the concept of immigration?
Yes, absolutely. Well, again, thank you for inviting me to this special programming, highlighting this important topic. My name is, again, Alfonso Mercado. I'm a professor at the University of Texas, Rio Grande Valley, which is situated in a very unique geographical location in the U.S.-Texas-Mexico border. McAllen, Texas is about maybe 10-12 miles away from northern Mexico, and I am a licensed clinical psychologist and researcher. I investigate trauma and health with recent immigrant populations, including asylum seekers, and also other vulnerable groups of immigrants like the DACA community, with United We Dream, the leading organization, advocacy organization for that population. And I also do clinical work in the community, serving this underserved area of our country, and provide consultation with different government agencies, in addition to NGOs as well. I'm happy to be here.
We're just so proud to have you. And so you've worked even with the federal government to help with some of these issues. Do I remember that correctly?
I do consult. I do consult with the Office of Refugee Resettlement, ORR, and occasionally I do get referrals from the government, like U.S. Customs and Immigration Detention centers across the country and here on the border, to provide psychological services for this population as well. And of course, like you mentioned, I am also with APA, with the American Psychological Association. I recently chaired the presidential task force, APA presidential task force on immigration and health, and we recently completed a report which also included resolutions to it that highlights future policy implications for the national association.
That is so fantastic and so needed. And we appreciate the work that you're doing. And we'd like to welcome Eamon Fahey today, too. Hi, Eamon.
Hello.
Eamon
has
a busy life. Yeah, you are so busy here in Montana. How's the refugee situation currently, Eamon?
Well, the situation is good. We recently welcomed another resettlement agency to the state. An office of another resettlement agency opened very recently in the city of Billings. So we're very excited to have another organization doing this important work in our state.
That's good to hear. That's a nice development. Yes, we do need more. About how many refugees do we have in Montana now?
Well, so the Office of the International Rescue Committee in Missoula opened in 2016. So we recently celebrated our 8th anniversary. And in that time period, we've resettled to Missoula about 800 folks to the community. We've also, another thing, given that we have Mayor Collins on the phone, that's very exciting, is we have placed several refugee families in the community of Helena with a co-sponsor group there.
So Hands On Global.
Yes, Hands On Global. Thank you. It's wonderful to see the growth. When we opened in 2016, there were no resettlement agencies in the state. So we're very excited to see, again, resettlement programs, resettlement agencies continuing to grow and in our wonderful state.
That is just excellent growth, and we're very grateful to have that happening in the state of Montana. And again, we want to welcome Wilmot Collins, and you have such a remarkable story. Wilmot told us that whole story previously on his show. Could you give us a thumbnail sketch of how you came here and what's gone on with you over those years?
Yes, thanks for having me, Doc. Well, I'm Wilmot Collins, and I'm from Liberia, West Africa. As some of you may know, that Liberia was established by slaves that were freed from this country and went back to, that left here and went back to Africa, Liberia being the first independent African nation. Liberia got engulfed in a brutal civil war, and a lot of people fled the country. My wife and I being two of them that fled, we fled on a Nigerian cargo vessel to Ghana. There we, before fleeing, I used to work at an international school as a middle school teacher. And a branch of that school was in Ghana. We were able to contact that branch when we got to Ghana. After being there for about 3 months, my wife decided that she wanted to come to America. Most specifically, she wanted to come to Montana. And I had never heard of Montana. I told her, hey, make up your mind. We ought to go to America or we go to Montana. And she said, but Montana is in America, you know. So that was my first introduction to Montana. And so, my wife had been an African exchange student here in Montana, and she contacted her host family that she lived with while she was a student. And they were instrumental in getting the local college, Carroll College, to award my wife a full scholarship. And that's how she was able to come. And I couldn't because, what happened was Liberians in, the U.S. decided that they petitioned Congress, and Congress was able to pass the Liberian Resettlement Act, which enabled Liberians who had families that were citizens or green card holders, Liberians who joined them, who joined the family. And I didn't fit any of that because my wife was a student. However, my wife came pregnant. And when she had our little girl, I had registered with the United Nations High Commission for Refugee, and I was going through the whole refugee process. And it took me 2 years and 7 months to conclude that process and able to join my family. And when I came, you know, I didn't let any moss grow under my feet. I just started moving because I knew I had to find work to take care of my family. In fact, the first person I met was Mark Roscoe. I decided to go to the Capitol. And I still remember I saw the office of the Secretary of State. And on my left, I saw the office of the governor. And I decided to go to the governor's office. And when I got there, I got stopped and asked if I had an appointment. I said, no, I don't. The lady said, would you like to make one? I said, yes, sure. So I'm writing my name down and my address. And this gentleman comes behind me and says, may I help you? And I said, no, sir, I'm here to meet the governor. He said, well, my name is Mark Roscoe and I'm the governor. What can I do for you? I said, oh, well, I'm from Liberia. No, I said, I'm just from Africa last week, and I thought I should come and meet you. He said, what part of Africa? I said, Liberia. He said, oh, where the slaves went? I said, yes. And then he invited me into his office. He said, Mr. Collins, what do you do? I pulled my resume from my pocket and handed it to him. He looked it over and said, oh, you're a teacher. I said, yes, sir. And he pressed his intercom and invited Pat Haffey in. He said, what can we do for Mr. Collins? She said, well, Inner Mountain Children's Home is looking for counselors. Then she took a card, his business card and her business card. So why don't you apply at Inner Mountain Children's Home and use the governor and myself as your references? I looked at him. I said, can I do that? He said, yes, it will be an honor. So the following week, I started working, and I never looked back, and things just happened. And 3 months later, I joined the Montana Army National Guard. I put in 22 years in the U.S. military, and when I retired 2017, I decided to run for mayor of Helena. And as you all know, the rest is history. Right. Now, one important thing I want people to remember is that we here in America, we don't think about some of the things, how we get some of what we have. Like, how many of you have ever thought about where the Firestone tire, BF Goodrich, Bridgestone, all that material comes from is from Liberia. Liberia has the world's largest rubber plantation. And this is the country that shipped the rubber to you in America, and you make those tires. So America is not an island. America depends on a lot of external forces that makes, that's what makes this country what it is today, because of those external businesses and forces.
That is a fantastic review. Thank you. Thank you, Wilmot. And we all applaud your arrival to the United States. And
thank you.
So I guess we've been hearing so much lately about the travails and difficulties of having immigrants. Do any of you have something to say about the rhetoric we've been hearing surrounding immigration and immigrants recently?
I think one thing would be, what is the APA resolution on that, Dr. Mercado?
That is a great question. And the resolution stems from a report from the task force. We gathered 12 experts in the field of immigration and health science. And we updated the seminal document, that report that APA first published back in 2011, 2012. It was a crossroads report which highlighted the psychology of immigration in the new century. Fast forward 12, 13 years later, as everyone knows, a lot has changed since then, including that, you know, that rhetoric that we're talking about, you know, that is ill-informed, you know, doesn't have, you know, science, data, you know, supporting some of the realities of what we're seeing here on the U.S.-Mexico border, where I live and work. So this report highlights the changes to the context of immigration in the United States since that report back in 2011. And it reviews trends in foreign-born populations in the U.S., including countries of origin, legal status, social, political, cultural context of their reception. And it also, you know, highlights the various discriminatory immigration policies in the United States that have caused a lot of trauma and abuse. And that's something that we pay particular attention in the report, because it's been all over the news, all of these policies throughout the years, you know, even before the Trump administration, now current Biden administration. Yes, it's a different administration, but to be quite frank, nothing much has changed. Some policies have been repackaged, named differently, but we are still seeing trauma and abuse manifested among different current policies. And that's something that the report highlights, in addition to looking at the current state of the and future goals of psychological practice, research, training, and advocacy with this population. And the resolutions highlight specific items from the report that are going to play a big role in shaping the field of psychology and advocacy and science, and really are going to guide, you know, these policy statements in education, in research, and in treatment, cultural adaptations of evidence-based treatments in psychology. So really, in a nutshell, that is what the report and the resolutions highlight.
Excellent. You know, it's interesting, too, in a recent Gallup survey, 80% of respondents said immigration was a good thing for the country and that we need more immigration.
I'm glad you mentioned that. Can I say something?
Please.
We were strategic in this report, the task force was, in having an introduction that highlights that, that highlights stories and the strengths and the positives of migration and immigration in the United States. in regards to the economy. You mentioned all those huge, you know, Fortune 500 companies and all these, you know, agencies and employers founded by immigrants. And unfortunately, those positives of migration and immigration populations are not at the forefront of the news, are not in the rooms being discussed when advocacy and policy and bills, you know, that highlight immigration and mental health. And, you know, it was important for the task force to highlight those strengths and then highlight some of the practices and the current context of immigration in the country.
But and I agree with you totally. But I want to add something here. I applaud you, Dr. Wood, for having this program, because I think one thing we're missing is that anti-immigrants and anti-immigration sentiments are on the forefront all the time. Everywhere we go, that's what we hear, that's what we see. We are not doing anything to inform the public. We are not doing anything to let the public know that this is what it is. We have the truth on our side, but what are they hearing? What is the community hearing? What are the anti-immigrants are hearing? They're hearing all those negative sentiments. We as a body, that's why I applaud you for this program, because we need to start telling the truth. We need to start letting the truth get out. All these agencies need to start. That's something they need to start doing. Getting the truth out about immigration. Getting the truth out about immigrants. And I think that will be able to change some of these crazy policies and crazy ideas that are floating around here. Because we're just sitting on the truth. We're not doing anything with it.
And that's so unfortunate. In fact, I want to tell one story real quickly. You asked the question, is it possible for an immigrant to add over $1 trillion in value to the economy? One immigrant, Google, only the fourth company to reach the $1 trillion valuation, was co-founded by an immigrant. Born in Russia, Sergey Brin immigrated with his parents to the United States to escape Jewish persecution in 1979. While completing his doctorate at Stanford, he would collaborate with Larry Page, and the two created a search engine out of their research project. That project quickly turned into a massively successful business co-founded by that duo. In 2020, Google Search, Google Play, YouTube, and Google advertising tools provided $426 billion of economic activity for more than 2 million American businesses, nonprofits, publishers, creators, and developers. Additionally, more than 17 million American businesses received requests for directions, phone calls, bookings, reviews, and other direct connections to Google. That's impactful today.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. Yes.
In addition to its valuation, Google has over 100,000 employees in North America alone, showing how only one company, founded by an immigrant, has the potential to create great value. So there we go.
Yeah, and if I may add on to all of this, and this is a great discussion, but I think we've hit on two really important points. Again, as Mayor Collins mentioned, sort of getting the truth out there. And part of the truth is in these numbers and this data,
right,
which is hugely impactful. And just another data point, I think earlier this year, the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office did an analysis of the impact of increased immigration since 2022 to the country. And if that number at which it was increased were to continue for the next 10 years, the economic impact was something like $10 trillion. So it's what has made our economy, our country, resilient. Again, it's the oxygen and sort of the nation's blood, if you will. So yeah. That's the first thing. The second thing that is so important is telling these stories. Mayor Collins just told you his story. We just heard about Sergey Brin from Google. And you know, when I talk to people about this, especially young people, I say go talk to your parents, your grandparents, and ask about where did we come from?
Right.
And those stories they're amazing. But that's who we are. The esteemed John Lewis said something like, "We all came here on different boats, but now we're on the same boat together." So we've made this work. We need to continue to make it work, especially in the face of, again, this extremely dangerous, and it's not new at all. This is part of our history, too. But the anti-immigrant dialogue, which is certainly ramping up these days. But I think those are really two really important points. Again, storytelling. And again, getting the truth out there. Just data that can get to that.
Speaking of data, I have something from the Center on Budget Priorities. It suggests that immigrants pump $13 billion toward the cash flow of Social Security each year. These contributions they likely won't be able to use. And in this, Social Security boss, the chief actuary, Stephen Goss, concluded that immigrants pay in more than they take out.
Right.
And that has had a result of a net positive impact on Social Security financial status generally to help out with the Social Security program.
Yes, and a lot of the rhetoric is just the opposite of that, saying that,
exactly.
Oh, the immigrants are taking more
right.
than they receive. And again, the data tells a very different story. Of that Congressional Budget Office number, I think $2 trillion was just the tax. So paid by, again, these new Americans. $2 trillion, that's, it's very much in line with what you just said about Social Security. So that's another truth that we just need to counter, again, these mistruths with.
And how do we get this out there? How do we get it publicized just like the anti-immigration sentiments are out there? We need to work harder. We need to get it out there.
That makes me think that maybe we need to do some public service announcements on our radio station and on our
yes.
website, just highlighting some of the contributions. It's so easy to see when you look at the actual data.
Yeah, it is. And part of the challenge, though, is, again, telling these stories, telling these truths takes time. Again, it's easier to get out, again, these mistruths and sound bites. But you're absolutely right. We need to work harder, again, to get this stuff out there.
And we need all the listeners to join us in making an effort to say something good or do something kind if you know or work with or see immigrants around you.
You know, I heard this story from the owner of Holiday Inn in Missoula when she said that some Congolese or Sudanese are in Missoula, and they work at her place. She created a room to show them what to do, how to use, how to clean the room, how to do. A whole room is used as a training tool. But what was amazing about what she said was she's never had a call off.
Mm-hmm.
The employees work 365 days. Sometimes, 7 days a week, she's never had a call off.
Incredible.
What does that say?
Oh, yes.
Incredible.
Mm-hmm. And I think our listeners need to be aware, also incredible, we all need medical care at some time or another. And there are actually 2.8 million immigrant health care professionals. In fact, approximately 28% of physicians and surgeons are immigrants. 25% of our health aides are immigrants, and 15% of our nurses. How could we do without those folks?
And you are totally right again, because last month I went to North Carolina. My high school from Liberia, who we were meeting in North Carolina, just who all we could find that came from Liberia. And you should have seen the amount of doctors, surgeons, nurses, social workers, dentists, optometrists. I mean, I'm just talking about that little group of us that came from Liberia, from that little school. I was just blown away by it.
I wanted to ask Dr. Mercado, in South Texas, how do the Hispanic population deal with all of the misinformation?
That is a great question. Something I do want to add, though, to the health discussion of immigrants, something that the task force report highlighted and in the resolutions as well, is that we can learn so much from this population, meaning that, yes, immigrants are vulnerable, also, but not inherently prone to physical and mental health concerns. Immigrants have developed resilience-building strategies that can inform healthcare in the United States. And if we look at different conceptualizations of health models, for example, like the Hispanic healthcare docs model, I work with mostly Latinx Hispanic populations down here on the border. Although they've experienced an immense amount of trauma in their home countries, during the migratory journey from their home countries to the United States, and being faced by these policies that are further exacerbating the trauma and the exposure, they are so resilient. They are so strong. And just their motivation to come to a country where they have the freedom to live, because that's all what many of the population that we encounter here, they want to live. If they remain in their home countries, they're being threatened. They're being tortured and abused. And even here on the border region, we have one of the highest numbers of asylum seeking families and unaccompanied minors. What you see in the media sometimes, you know, where the border towns are, you know, getting the spillover effects of this population and the cartels it's so violent. But if you look at the facts, McAllen is the third safest city in the United States, and it's a border
goodness.
Town.
Oh, I'm so glad you said
Amen.
That.
Amen.
And I just want to throw in here real quickly that one of the facts I came across was that children of immigrants graduate high school at about 20% more than USA students do.
You know,
even with all their stressors.
A little story I told my kids. They were born here, and I told them, you know, you have to be better than your mom and myself. And so I started working on my doctorate, and my son got nervous. He said, Dad, are you telling me I need to have two doctors then? I know is that you got to be better than me. All right? And so he really, I mean, went through high school so nervous. I got to get two doctors. And my, you know, so, but the, and if you ask my son, one of the radio stations asked him, what's the hardest part about living with immigrant parents? He said, oh, my God, when we go home, we're in Africa. When we're outside of the home we're in America.
Oh, my. Well said. You know, I wanted to just mention one other bit of research I came across. We tend to think that those who aren't educated and maybe not going in for a doctorate and starting Google, but immigrants without a four-year college degree from the Center of on the Budget in Washington, D.C., that in the different occupations, 36% of farming, fishing, and forestry occupations are immigrants, 36% for cleaning and maintenance occupations, 29% for textile and apparel manufacturing. The food industry, 27% are immigrants without a four-year college degree. Hotel, 27%, construction, 24%, and administrative support services, 24%. So even those who come here without the benefit of an education or a teaching degree are, what would we do without, for instance, 30%?
I think that this population that you mentioned, they are the ones that kept us alive during the global pandemic when we were all ordered to stay home. And we had the luxury of staying home. They're the ones that were working in the fields, filling in our grocery stores of our local towns. And there are the invisible essential workers that don't get much attention during the global pandemic in the beginning stages. I'm glad you mentioned that.
That is so true.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, that's where our resilience comes from, is that exact population. And, you know, you can take the Springfield, Ohio example. The Haitian immigrants that are now being lied about by certain politicians, they have transformed what was a struggling community economically by providing a workforce, a very hardworking and workforce that has contributed immensely to a community being turned around. It's really important, yes, that we tell the stories of Mayor Collins and the co-founder of Google. But yes, these stories too are so, so very important.
Yes, indeed. So,
yeah, thank you for sharing that.
And back to the mention you made of how they service in so many ways. During COVID, immigrants were noted for being self-sacrificing, and they disproportionately served in some of the most at-risk jobs in medical facilities during COVID. They were overrepresented in all of those sectors most affected by the pandemic. And as a result, they had 41% reported deaths among Hispanic people just for one group. So despite that, they stayed in and helped us. So we owe actually a whole lot to those immigrants within our communities.
I would like to follow up on something Dr. Mercado mentioned just a few minutes ago, but about, again, the resilience that we can learn from the immigrant population has. And would just like to share sort of anecdotally, that's exactly what we see here in, as a resettlement agency in Montana. We last fall, about a year ago, last October, we had some white supremacist anti-immigrant demonstrators stop by our office on a Saturday, and then they moved down the road to a synagogue and a couple of other places in our community. And our first concern was about staff safety and our client safety. But the clients, their resilience, their ability to handle another trauma was remarkable. And again, in some ways, we look to them for strength for our own resilience. So I just wanted to show follow up on that. I think that's a really important point. Again, from sort of the health services field, what we can again learn from the example of immigrants. Another really, really important point.
Indeed, and we know, you know, from our report too, that research is beginning to shed light on this, you know, on the many mechanisms that immigrants use to develop resilience in the context of disadvantageous conditions. This resilience has allowed immigrants to survive these hardships and disadvantages. And health equity experts have started to learn, you know, that these strategies and the science in the area, you know, is quickly growing. So, you know, I think more is to come to shed light into this, but, you know, you are absolutely right.
Eamon, how would you say that most of the immigrants with whom you've been working with and whom you've placed in various settings, how are they adapting and what do you see in that group?
Yeah, so we've experienced, again, we've been here now for 8 years. One of the things I think that another trauma, I would say, that immigrants often experience is disconnectedness. Sorry. What's happened, you know, since those first folks came over and from the Congo and Eritrea, you know, they didn't have any community here. Now we've had, you know, we now have communities, a Congolese community. We have an Arabic speaking community, an Afghan community. So with those communities in place, again, they find, they're able to find connection, which is, again, one of the keys to successfully resettling. So that's something that I've just noticed in the 3.5 years or so that I've been doing this work, is we've made a lot of progress just because we do have these established communities now in Missoula. Again, just showing, demonstrating a key point to mental health is that connectedness piece.
That's just wonderful to hear about that wonderful cultural diversity and how much it will add for each of us.
Yeah, and something else that's really neat, and this has really happened in the last year, but we're having family reunifications. So folks who maybe similar to Mayor Collins, a couple of members of their family maybe were resettled 5 years ago. Well, now, you know, their family's coming, their mom, their sister, their brother. A very, very powerful to see these reunifications. You see that across immigration communities, just when, again, building those connections is so key. So
absolutely,
if you're able to bring family over, it's just one of the things, again, that makes us want to double down on what is oftentimes very hard work.
And I know Wilmot could speak to that, having been delayed to be able to join his wife. And did I remember that you only weighed 90 pounds when you finally made it to the United States?
92 pounds.
92. My wife.
Hey, come on, don't you cut 2 pounds off my weight.
No.
But my wife was 85 pounds and I was 92 when we finally fled into safety. And so, yeah. You know, I always say the good old man upstairs, the Lord took care of us, because there was no way we did that on our own. Because when we got into safety and realized that we had all the imaginable illnesses, squashy okra, we have malaria and dysentery and everything. But he kept us safe until we got out there. So, yes, it wasn't easy.
Wilmot, how much do you weigh now?
Oh, not fair? You don't have to answer that.
I can tell you, 182.
You doubled.
That's about twice.
I know.
Fantastic. And Eamon?
182. What's that?
And I was going to just say, Eamon, did you also bring over some folks from Ukraine recently?
We actually have not resettled folks from Ukraine. Ukrainians came under a, sort of a different program. So we do have Ukrainians actually throughout Montana in our communities. But they were, the way that they came as their immigration status was as what are called humanitarian parolees. And they weren't resettled via a resettlement agency, which is the work that we do, but they were sponsored by individuals and welcomed to various communities in that way.
That's so great.
But,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But we do provide some services to those, to the Ukrainians and to other populations that have come in through humanitarian parole. And actually, just last night, we received our first Spanish-speaking, so refugees from the Americas, two families. So we're excited to hopefully welcome. This will be the first of many, I hope. Again, they came from Guatemala. So I hope that we'll see some more folks from the Americas here in the coming year.
And could I just ask you, Eamon, I know that you set up housekeeping for these people and help them find jobs. And I remember filling up our car to bring things over. What are some of the things that people could do to help the immigrants near your office or anywhere? We drove up from Bozeman, but tell us about what we could all do to help with this effort.
Yeah, well, there are a few things you can do. Again, do exactly what you and Arlo did and donate, whether it's items that are needed, and we'll have a list of sort of some of those things on our website, which is rescue.org/Missoula, or financial contributions are very helpful. But in terms of doing other things, if you're an employer, as we've mentioned before, the immigrant community is a great, provides great employees. So I would encourage you, again, like Mayor Collins mentioned in Holiday Inn, at the Holiday Inn in Missoula, yeah, it's transformed businesses in our community. And again, we can use that Springfield, Ohio example as well. Montana, the state of Montana was just named the least affordable housing market in the country. Yes. So housing is always very, very challenging. So if you have an apartment for rent, and would consider renting it out to a refugee or an immigrant family, please reach out to us. Again, that's always a challenge. It's a challenge for all of us. The folks that we work with, they have no credit history, they have no rental history, so they have some more barriers to getting housing. But reach out to us again if you know someone, or if you have an apartment, or a mother-in-law suite, or whatever it might be that you might consider leasing out or renting out to an immigrant family. So those are some of the things you can do, and I think the other thing is, and we're very fortunate in Missoula, and I think in the state of Montana, to be very welcoming. But just be welcoming and be kind, and that goes a long way to again having a successful community and a successful welcome.
Thank you, Eamon. And I always like to just mention that the IRC was started and initiated by this guy who was, he was fairly intelligent, by Albert Einstein in 1933. So I think his legacy, among other things, is helping many, many immigrants. So, Albert Einstein.
Yes, indeed. Yes. A fun fact, no doubt.
Mm-hmm.
And another fun fact before we close. Who was the first president of being born in a hospital?
I don't know.
He turned 100 today.
Jimmy Carter.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Yes. Oh, that's a good one. Okay.
He's amazing. He had brain cancer a year ago or so and is still hanging in there.
Yes.
Happy birthday, Jimmy. Well, any final thoughts as we get close to closing here? We need to do this again and keep people informed about these issues.
I do want to say one last thing about APA's immigration and science report. One of the conclusions that the report documented in reviewing the science and the data in different fronts is that immigration is more unifying than commonly believed. Most Americans and people around the world agree that immigrants are a strength, something that we've talked about today. And, you know, most people in the U.S. would really like to see more humane immigration policies that provide a pathway to citizenship. And that's something that, you know, we highlighted at the conclusion of the report.
Yes, 80%.
If only we can get politicians to come to some kind of agreement, which of course seems impossible in today's world, but maybe not. We keep working on it, keeping providing facts, PSAs, any kind of informational programs that we can. But I guess politicians play oftentimes use the fear of their constituents to get votes, but I somehow hope we can get beyond this.
I would say that my final thought is, let's take back the narratives.
Yes. Yes. For instance, President John F. Kennedy said, every aspect of the American economy has profited from the contributions of immigrants.
Yes.
And President George Washington said, I had always hoped that this land might become a safe and agreeable asylum to the virtuous and persecuted part of mankind, to whatever nation they might belong.
Amen.
Amen, yeah.
As we come to the end of the program, I would urge people in Gallatin Valley to not only listen to this program once, but go to the archives, kgvm.org, and pull up the program, share it with others. We're great. We're happy to have it on kgvm.org, and it can be used as partially as a PSA informational tool. We've had some great guests today. Suzanne has some final words here.
I just wanted to give our commendations to the American Psychological Association for their recent beautiful golden resolution that talks about the need to support those who are such valuable friends and neighbors, our immigrants.
Dr. Mercado, any final word?
I think this is a great platform to bring awareness. And, you know, if we could only do more of that in different avenues to shed light into the realities of immigration and health.
And IRC, any final words?
No, I would just echo both what Dr. Mercado said and Mayor Collins, just about, again, countering these mistruths with truth, and again with narratives and stories. That's how I think we can get through this. And I think another important thing is, understanding that, yes, we need to have an orderly process for immigration in our country, but it does not have to be cruel and orderly. It can be humane and orderly, which is something Dr. Mercado also mentioned. Absolutely. So that's what we need to, aspire to. And that's looking back at, just the immense contributions that immigrants have made to us and our communities and our country.
Mayor, you have the final say.
Let's take back the narratives.
Good.
Perfect. We shall.
Thank you, Gallatin Valley. Thank you, guest. And we'll see you again at the next Health and Happiness program. Good evening.